I welcome you now to number two. I'm going to begin a section of our study now, which we have entitled The Nature of Managerial Communication. Catherine Bartol and David Martin, in their book entitled Management, wrote the following. Communication is the exchange of messages between people for the purpose of achieving common meanings. Unless meanings are shared, managers find it extremely difficult to influence others. Without effective communication, even the most brilliant strategist and the best laid plans may not be successful. In their work, managers and administrators use two major types of communication. Those two types would be verbal and nonverbal. Each type plays an important part in the effective transmission of messages within the particular organization. Verbal communication is the written or oral use of words to communicate. Both written and oral communications are certainly used in organizations. Written communication occurs through a variety of means, such as business letters, office memorandums, reports, resumes, written telephone messages, newsletters, policy procedures, manuals, and so forth. According to several estimates, the cost of producing a single letter or memo has risen to more than $7, and one estimate places the figure as high as $25 for the average memo. Yet, in one study, more than 80% of the managers surveyed judged the quality of written communication that they received as either fair or poor. They also did not give themselves very high grades, with 55% describing their own writing skills as fair or poor. Despite such shortcomings in writing skills, written communication generally has several advantages over oral communication. It provides a record of the message, it can be disseminated widely with a minimum of effort, and it allows the sender to think through the intended message carefully. Written communication also has several disadvantages, including the expense of the preparation, a relatively impersonal nature, possible misunderstanding by the receiver, and the delay of feedback regarding the effectiveness of the message. Oral communication, or the spoken word, takes place largely through face-to-face conversations with another individual, meetings with several individuals, and, of course, telephone conversations. Oral communication has the advantage of being fast, being generally more personal than written communication, and providing immediate feedback from others involved in the conversation. Among the disadvantages of oral communication are that it can be time-consuming, it can be more difficult to terminate, and additional effort is required to document what is said if a record is necessary. Given the advantages and the disadvantages of written and oral communication, it's not surprising that both types of verbal communication are used by managers. Nonverbal communication is communication by means of elements and behaviors that are not coded to words. Studies estimate that nonverbal aspects account for between 65 to 93% of what is communicated. Interestingly, it is quite difficult to engage in verbal communication without some accompanying form of nonverbal communication. Important categories of nonverbal communication include kinetic behavior, proximities, paralanguage, and object language. Kinesis behavior comprises body movements, such as gestures, facial expression, eye movements, and posture. In assessing people's feelings about an issue, we often draw conclusions not only from their words, but also from their nonverbal behavior, such as their facial expressions. All of these are a part of what is identified as kinesis behavior. Proxemics is the influence of proximity and space on communication. For example, some managers arrange their offices so that they have an informal area where people can sit without experiencing the spatial difference in the formal category, which is often created by a big desk. Another example of proxemics, which you are probably familiar with and probably have experienced, is that you're more likely to get to know students whom you happen to sit near in class than students who are sitting in other parts of the room. Paralanguage consists of vocal aspects of communication that relate to how something is said rather than to what is actually said. Paralanguage would involve voice quality, tone of voice, language, yawning. All of these would fit into the paralanguage category. Object language is the communicative use of material things, including clothing, cosmetics, furniture, and architecture. If you prepare a job resume, or if you have prepared a job resume lately, you probably gave some thoughts to its layout and to the type of paper that you wanted to print it on. These are aspects of object language, enabling you to communicate information about yourself beyond what you have presented in written form on the page. Such nonverbal elements form an important part of the message that managers communicate through object language. I think we would have to say that managers spend most of their time communicating in one form or another. Studies show that they tend to prefer oral over written communication, largely because oral communication is usually more informal and timely. One detailed study showed that four top managers in four different types of organizations spent almost 74% of their working hours communicating orally with others through informal and formal meetings or telephone calls or even taking individuals on tours through the organization. These executives spent about 50% of that time communicating with subordinates. Most of the remaining contact time was spent with the board of directors, peers, trade organizations, clients, and suppliers. Although the study focused on top-level managers, managers at other levels also lean toward the spoken word rather than the written word. Managers serve as communication centers through several managerial roles, such as the role of monitor, or the role of disseminator, or sometimes even the role of spokesperson. As a monitor, the manager seeks internal and external information about issues that can affect the organization. As a disseminator, the manager transmits information internally that is obtained for either internal or external sources. As a spokesperson, the manager transmits information about the organization to outsiders. Thus, in their informational roles, managers serve as the nerve centers of their organizational units by receiving information, by comparing information, by organizing information, and by transmitting information. One of the most famous studies of managers was conducted by management scholar Henry Mintzberg. Mintzberg followed several top managers around for 1 week. He recorded everything that they did during that week's period of time. In documenting their activities, Mintzberg reached some interesting conclusion about the manager's work methods and about several major roles that managers play. The managers in Mintzberg's study showed a strong preference for verbal communication through either phone conversations or meetings rather than written communication such as memos and formal reports. Telephone calls tended to be short, lasting an average of 6 minutes. The managers in the study experienced continual interruptions from telephone calls and from subordinates. They often stopped their own desk work to place calls or requests that subordinates drop in. Mintzberg's study also revealed that managers relied heavily on networks for obtaining and transmitting information. A network is a set of cooperative relationships with individuals whose help is needed in order for a manager to function effectively. The network contacts in Mintzberg's study included superiors, subordinates, peers, and other individuals inside of the organization, as well as numerous outside individuals. Some of the contacts were personal, such as friends and peers. Others were professional, such as consultants, lawyers, and insurance underwriters. Still others were trade association contacts, customers, and suppliers. The point is that managers acting in these roles form the basis for the organization's communication network. If managers and those with whom they interact do not communicate effectively, the repercussions can be serious, not only for the particular manager's work unit, but for the rest of the organization as well. Miscommunications can slow down and even short-circuit communications throughout the entire organizational structure. And of course, on the other hand, concerted efforts to promote effective communication can certainly be a key ingredient in an organizational success. Roger Fritz, in his book, Think Like a Manager, reminds us that communication is the element that can make or break a relationship. Your progress as a manager can hinge on this vital ingredient, even if you are generally effective in other areas of management. It is vital, therefore, for the manager to communicate, to inform his people. Now, this is important for several reasons. First, because information and access to information are primary sources of power. Therefore, if you want weak people, tell them little and keep lots of secrets. And the second reason that communication is so important, because people are most likely to do what is expected if they know what is expected. The manager must explain. Then number three. Because people can usually find ways to meet expectations and performance if given feedback about the results. You see, people are more likely to misinterpret what they don't know than what they do know. So, tell them. Number four, because productivity can be increased when job workers, employees, those who are involved in the project, receive clear and concise information about performance requirements and results. This means that to withhold information is to retard productivity. Now, at the heart and center of all of this, managers spend most of their time communicating with others. Research confirms what any manager already knows intuitively. Communication is a fundamental aspect of job performance and managerial effectiveness. Communication is the transmission of information and meaning from one party to another through the use of shared symbols. Thomas Bateman and Carl Zeithml, in their book, Management Function and Strategy, have written, "The sender initiates the process by conveying information to the receiver, the person for whom the message is intended. The sender has a meaning he or she wishes to communicate and encodes the meaning into symbols, that is, the words he or she has chosen for the message. The sender transmits or sends the message through some channel, such as a verbal or written medium. Then the receiver decodes the message. That is, he reads it, he attempts to interpret the sender's meaning. the receiver may provide feedback to the sender by encoding a message in response to the sender's message. The communication process is hampered by many things. Communication process can be hampered by noise or interference in a system that blocks perfect understanding. Noise is identified as anything that interferes with your attention to the conversation. It could be the ringing of a telephone, a knock at the door, thoughts about other items, or simple fatigue and stress. An in-depth look at the communication process can help us understand the complicated issues involved in adequate communication. Catherine Bartle and David Martin in their book Management discuss the communicative process as follows. The sender is the initiator of the message. Messages are usually initiated in response to an outside stimulus, such as a question, a meeting, an interview, a problem, or a report. The stimulus triggers a need or desire for the sender to communicate or attempt to achieve a common meaning with an individual or group. Before the message exchange can take place, however, the sender must engage in encoding, that is, the process of translating the intended meaning into words and gestures. The sender's choice of words and gestures will depend upon such factors as sender encoding skills, assessment of the intended receiver's ability to understand various symbols, judgments regarding the appropriateness of certain symbols, past experience in similar situations, job status, education, and the emotional state at the time of the communication attempt. For example, since Americans often do not speak foreign languages, they frequently fail to recognize that the idioms and regional sayings used in English conversation can cause problems for individuals for whom English is a second language. Hence, they do not give considerations to such factors in the encoding process. To illustrate, a non-American worker was asked to give me a hand, will you? To which he replied by looking at his hands and stating that he needed both of them. The outcome of the encoding process is a message consisting of the verbal, either oral or written, and nonverbal symbols that have been developed to convey meaning to the receiver. The medium is the method used to convey the message to the intended receiver. Examples include written words in a memo, spoken words over the phone, graphics on a slide, and gestures in a face-to-face situation. The sender of a message must consider the appropriateness of the medium. For example, a telephone call may be an effective means of resolving a conflict over a minor item, but a face-to-face meeting may be more appropriate for negotiating a major change in a project. The receiver is the person with whom the message is exchanged. If no exchange takes place, that is, the receiver does not receive the message, there is no communication. There may be one receiver of the message, as in a conversation between two individuals, or many receivers, as in the case of a report sent to various members of the organization. Unintended receivers can also emerge if they overhear a private conversation or read another person's mail. When the message is received, the receiver engages in the process of decoding, that is, the process of translating the symbols into the interpreted message. When the communication is effective, the sender and the receiver achieve a common meaning. However, the decoding process may result in misunderstanding if the receiver does not decode the message as the sender intended. Noise is any factor in the communication process that interferes with exchanging messages and achieving common meaning. Noise includes, for example, interruptions while the sender is encoding, static on the telephone lines as the message is being transmitted, and fatigue on the part of the receiver while he or she is decoding the message. Feedback is the receiver's basic response to the interpreted message. This response involves a reversal of the communication process so that actually the receiver now becomes the sender and the sender becomes the receiver. Feedback provides preliminary information to the sender about the success of the communication process. Without feedback, managers have difficulty assessing the effectiveness of their communication attempts. When the communication process does not allow feedback, it is called one-way communication. Memos, newsletters, and announcements are examples of one-way communication. At least when they do not explicitly provide for feedback for those to whom the message is directed. When managers do not incorporate means for immediate feedback into the communication process, they run the risk that the intended message will not be understood by the receiver. With one-way communication, they might not find out about miscommunication until it is too late to correct it. Therefore, on one-way communication, information flows in only one direction, from the sender to the receiver, with no feedback loop. A manager has her secretary send a memo to a subordinate without asking for immediate response. A boss gives an order over the phone. A father scolds his son and then storms out of the room. One-way communication. No opportunity for feedback. No opportunity for the sender to evaluate the effectiveness of the message sent. Conversely, when the communication process explicitly includes feedback, it is called two-way communication. One-way communication situations, like those described above, can become two-way if the manager follows up her memo with a phone call and asks the receiver if he has any questions, or if the boss on the telephone listens to and asks for alternative suggestions before carrying out the order, or if the father calms down and listens to his son's side of the story, two-way communication. This type of communication has a better chance of resulting in a reasonably accurate exchange of common meanings. Still, effective two-way communication requires that careful attention be paid to the communication process, particularly if several layers of the organization are involved in message transmission. Such attention is necessary for two basic reasons. First, each additional link adds to the possibility that the encoding and decoding processes and our noise will distort the information. Second, subordinates are often reluctant to provide negative information to upper layers of the hierarchy because they fear that they will be criticized. As a result, managers need to expend considerable effort to obtain accurate information even with two-way communication. Therefore, two-way communication means not only that the receiver provides feedback, but also that the sender is receptive to and responds to the feedback. In these constructive exchanges, information is shared between both parties rather than delivered from one person to the other. Studies have indicated that one-way communication is much more common than it should be because it's faster and easier for the sender. The busy executive finds it easier to dash off a memo than to discuss an issue with a subordinate. That takes time. Also, he doesn't have to deal with questions or be challenged by someone who disagrees strongly with what he has to say. He just puts out the memo, that's it. Two-way communication is more difficult and time-consuming than one-way communication. However, it is more accurate. Thus, fewer mistakes occur and fewer problems arise. Receivers have a chance to ask questions, share concerns, make suggestions or modifications, and consequently understand more precisely what is being communicated and what they should do with the information. Bateman and Zeithmel remind us that there are certain communication pitfalls that we need to remember. The sender's intended message does not always get across to the receiver. Here's a fact that conveys the ambiguities of communication and possibilities for misinterpretation. For the 500 most commonly used words in the English language, there are over 14,000 definitions. Errors can occur, therefore, in all stages of the communication process. In the encoding stage, words can be misused, decimal points typed in the wrong places, facts can be left out, or ambiguous phrases inserted. In the transmission stage, a memo gets lost on a cluttered desk, the words on the overhead transparency are too small to read from the back of the room, or words are spoken with inappropriate inflections. Decoding problems arise when the receiver doesn't listen carefully or reads too quickly and overlooks a key point. And of course, receivers can misinterpret the message as a reader draws the wrong conclusion from an unclear memo. A listener takes a general statement by the boss too personally, or a sideways glance is taken the wrong way. Thus, we find that there are many barriers to communication. These barriers become apparent by asking what two people have in common in order to communicate. A way of helping us to answer this question, we might ask, if you were an explorer in a jungle area and encountered a native who had never had any contact with the outside world, that is, outside of his village, what could you communicate with him about? The answer is that you could exchange meaning, through sign perhaps, only about those things with which both of you had past experience. Food, shelter, temperature, elimination, birth, death, facts about the environment such as where the sun rises and sets and so forth. The codes of past experience have to be shared by both parties before meaning can be exchanged.